Flyers Daily with Jason Mertidis.
It is a Monday edition of Flyers Daily, and we are getting darn close. I think we have one more. Is it one more Monday until left in August after today? I think it is. Yep. And then we'll be into the month of September. Can't believe it. And that's when we're going to start seeing some players come into town as well. And joining us for his Monday visit, as he always does, from PhiladelphiaFlyers.com, NHL.com, and HockeyBuzz.com, it is Bill Meltzer. Bill, I know you were at Alumni Fantasy Camp. How was it?
Oh, it's been fantastic. It's always a great time. And we did a really kind of little pretty cool excursion on Saturday night. We had a guided tour and a dinner aboard the USS New Jersey.
Oh, cool.
Most decorated battleship in U.S. naval history, and was built right in the Philadelphia Navy Yard. That was an amazing experience, getting, you know, talking to people that actually served 6 years on there, 10 years on there. That was really, really cool. And other thing about it was that was pretty darn cool was that, Keith Jones is one of the coaches at Fantasy Camp. So he was there last night. Danny Briere was there last night as a surprise. The campers didn't know Danny was going to surprise him and come to it. Ian LaPerriere is one of the coaches at camp again this year. And those guys get it. They are so good with the fans, so connected. And just watching them interacting with fans. And obviously these people are also hockey players too. So there's that bond there as well. But just being a fly on the wall, taking it all in is really, really cool. And, you know, with hockey around the corner, it was nice to be around the rink again.
And I'm sure it just felt good to be inside the rink. Just the feeling you get in the hockey, like that's a home for us. You know, people that love this game, cover this game, played the game, just the hum of the rink. And one of my very peaceful places is being in a hockey rink when there's a freshly cut sheet of ice there and nobody else is in the rink, not a sound. And just that hum of the generators and the refrigeration and everything. It's got its own smell. Some of it good, some of it not so good, but it is a comforting place for me. And I know for you as well. Bill, over the weekend, looking at kind of this day in Flyers history, I mean, we've had a pretty decorated weekend for big happenings that the Flyers have had, in particular, yesterday on Sunday. That was the day in 1982 that the Flyers acquired Mark Howe. best defenseman in franchise history, Hall of Famer. Also the day that the Tampa Bay Lightning, as you pointed out to me, didn't match the Chris Gratton offer sheet. And also the day in 2001 that the Flyers traded Eric Lindros to the Rangers. What the heck was happening on August 20th? Usually nothing happens on August 20th.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Three very major events in Flyers history. One of the best things that ever happened. One of them was a mistake in retrospect. The other was kind of, a little bit of a mixed bag, a little bit of both. But those are three huge things. And the biggest thing with getting Mark Howe 41 years ago, crazy that it's 41 years ago now.
Yeah.
Is that it shows that you have to be bold sometimes, because Kenny Linsman was coming off of, I think, a 92 point season. And That was the cost of doing business on there. You know, it was a three-team trade with the Flyers and the Hartford Whalers and the Edmonton Oilers. So Linsman had led the Flyers in scoring the previous year, and it also cost the Flyers a first-round pick. And at the time, they were pretty high on power forward Greg Adams too. But how do you turn down a number one defenseman? And obviously Howie came in, and he was a three-time Norris finalist, and one of the I can't even imagine the Flyers in the 80s without Mark Howe. And obviously, as you said, best defenseman in Flyers franchise history. So that was pretty monumental. I remember at the time it was a very exciting thing. I mean, if it hadn't been for Howe getting impaled on the net a year earlier and Hartford kind of panicking and putting him on the market, he probably wouldn't even been available.
Yeah.
So that pretty crazy. The Gratton thing, I mean, obviously that didn't really work out. And it's funny at the time because it was an offer sheet. It was a restricted free agent. And it cost the Flyers four first-round picks when they didn't match. But it was worked out as a trade. So they flipped the four first-round picks back to the Flyers, and they got Michael Ranberg and Carl Dykhouse in the trade. And I was a big Ranberg guy. Still am. Still love Rennie. But you go back and in hindsight, and two of those four picks were Simone Gagné and Justin Williams, but especially Gagné.
Yeah.
In hindsight, and you don't know who Tampa would have drafted, but thank goodness they turned into a trade. You can't imagine the Flyers without Gagné in the early 2000s.
Yeah. That's spectacular.
For sure. And the Lindros trade, Eric had held out for a year, and it was obvious the relationship with the Flyers was over. It was just a question of where he was going to land. I remember all that time, I suppose, Toronto.
Yeah, he's going home.
Yeah, going home. And for a while, it was Lindros straight up for Matt Sundin or Lindros for a package. And it just went on and on and on for a full year. And then finally, he traded to the hated Rangers. And that one worked out okay for the Flyers. Eric had he was still productive, but he wasn't the guy who was top five in points per game in NHL history as he was at the end of his Flyers career. And Kim Johnson came here. He won, I think, two Barry Ashby trophies.
Yeah.
Jan Halavich didn't stay very long, but they got Brashear straight up for Halavich, and Brashear served the team well for a number of years. And Pavel Brenda was a bust. But, the Flyers did get some value out of that. That's the bottom line. So, yeah, three huge moves, franchise-shifting moves. And, yeah, all in that day in history. Very strange.
It's almost hard to believe, which brings me to my next point. Because the common thread amongst those three things, the acquisition of Mark Howe and that trade with Kenny Linsman and the three-teamer, obviously just Lindros's tenure here, was a very bold and huge package to get him here and then ship him to the Rangers, who they fought against the Rangers to get him here in the first place when the MVP got to a finals in 97. And then the other element, obviously, is Chris Gratton, another very bold move, offer sheet, four picks you were willing to give up and recouped it, like you said. But they all were very bold moves, and the Flyers have been known to that. They've been conditioned for that. And I got this email from John S., I won't put his last name out there, but he says, Jason, it appears for now that the Flyers have learned their lesson and didn't sign any long-term big-dollar contracts. He said, you said it yourself, that players were being paid for what they've done, not what they're going to do. We didn't see any head-scratchers this offseason. I'm hoping the days of contracts like Ilya Bryzgalov and Andrew McDonald are over. John S. from Long Island. Now is not the time, Bill, for this team to swing big for the fences. You get Michkov at 7 in the draft, and, there was some subtraction this offseason and some moderate addition to this team. But this is going to be a much more deliberate approach. While they're going back in some ways to the days of Ed Snyder, not all of those days are going back to, because I don't know that swinging like that can work in today's NHL. And if you get desperate like that, like I think the Penguins did with Erik Karlsson, I think it's to detriment more than it is to benefit.
Yeah, and I mean, it can work out for a time. Look at the Chris Pronger trade, right? Would the Flyers have gotten to a cup final, got within an overtime of a game 7 without Chris Pronger? No, they wouldn't.
No chance.
And then, the next year after, I think he missed half the games, which was back and knee and all kinds of ailments. And then he had the career-ending ocular concussion, and Flyers have really been trying to get back to where they were at that point ever since, over the last 11 years, other than some small bounce backs here and there, but never
including a Shea Weber offer sheet.
Now that's another one. That's another what if that would be really interesting to go through. It can be done in the cap age. A lot of times the contracts don't age very well. I think in Pittsburgh's case, and we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, I think Pittsburgh's window is closed, and I don't understand why a team that A was healthy last year and didn't make the playoffs, B is the oldest team in the NHL, and C still has Chris Letang, really needed Erik Karlsson. So
Yeah, it seems redundant to me in nature as well. And they signed Jari to that long-term deal. And, you know, a lot of people very high on Kyle Dubas, you know, being the president and GM there. We'll see how that works out. I just think it's a situation that I just don't know that you can't suffer before it gets better there. And they seem to be delaying that. And I understand it with Crosby and Malkin and still Letang, but, you know, sometimes it's the right move is to move on and let go, not hang on for dear life. And that seems to be what they're doing. Bill, you know, speaking of number one defensemen and Markkanen and Chris Pronger and Kimo Tiimonen and Eric Desjardins, you know, instead of going back in this episode, and we'll get back to it next week to the top 10 question marks. I wanted to go through a couple of these, I called them knowns or things you know about this team with a relative level of certainty heading into this season. I wanted to run a couple of them past you. And speaking of number one, we've talked about, you know, the subtraction of Ivan Provorov and the trickle-down effect that could have. But one of the knowns I did have in the list that I put out in last week's episode was that despite not playing with a true number one partner, I feel very confident that Cam York is going to continue to develop his NHL game. I think he's going to get number one power play unit as a quarterback. Yeah. He's done that for the World Junior team, done it at other levels. But I think we're going to feel even better about Cam York at the end of this season than we did at the end of last season.
I think so, too. You know, I think that we now know that he is an NHL defenseman.
Yep.
That, you know, he can play at a pretty high level. Now, is he a first pair guy? We'll see. I think it's all, you know, a little bit partner dependent. We'll see who they end up playing him with going into this year. A number one guy is a little bit of a heavyweight to bear. But yep. But a guy who can certainly play, give you some minutes, and I think will A, continue to be more productive, and B, you'll see his all around game continue to grow this year. I he's a guy I do feel some confidence in.
Bill, do you think that, you know, due to the way that Cam York's year went last year, you know, from the day training camp began, not making the team, and going down with the Phantoms, taking care of business, coming up, and then, you know, John Tortorella saying, I don't mind if you make mistakes, but I want you to push the pace and make mistakes because you're being aggressive. And we started to see that more. And Cam's such a laid back type of player. And I talk about this a lot, that sometimes we see guys that are really fluid in sport. It doesn't look like they're trying hard because they're so fluid and just natural. He looks like that guy. But do you think that the way that things panned out for Cam York last year, with those ups and downs, do you think that changes the mindset on Emil Andre at all going into this training camp?
Well, it's I think to a degree. I think you have to view every case individually.
Yeah, I mean, Andre's only played a handful of games, basically, exactly, at the AHL level.
Just a few weeks in the American League. That did have that little short best of three playoff series. Mm-hmm. You know, He certainly looked pretty exciting. You know, it's against American League competition. I mean, it's fairly comparable to what he saw in Sweden, the level competition he played against. But you do have the rink adjustment, and I think the pace is just a tad quicker too. Didn't seem intimidated by anything. But if he's, you know, if he needs a little bit more time to develop, so be it. You know, and we'll see. We'll see when there's a definitive statement. His team in Sweden on their official Instagram thanked him for service of the team, wished him luck in North America, which hints at it hints at them being agreeable to him playing over in North America no matter what. They haven't made any official statement on that yet, but it seems to be leaning that way, and that's good. That way you're not forced to play him in the NHL or send him back to the Swedish team. And if he needs some time in the AHL, that's fine. Whether that's a few weeks, a month, even part of, you know, even 2 months, quarter of a season. Right. I think the things that he does well, he's clearly smart, clearly highly competitive, can run a power play. That's another candidate too.
Yeah.
Even if he starts out on PP2, that's a guy who, you know, I think that's in his future. And even though he's small height wise, and he's quite small height wise, he has that thick kind of build. So the low center of gravity, and he's not, again, he's not intimidated by anything. He's one of those smaller defensemen. I don't even think that's going to be a, I don't think that's going to be an issue. You know, I don't think you put the, I don't think you put pressure on him to, oh, he's the next Kimo Timonen, and he's the first Emil Andre. But I think he's, you know, but there's a lot to like.
Yeah, that low center of gravity and like just like a fire plug. I don't think the small rink intimidates his game. And I think he's one of those guys that with the structure of the NHL and the way they like to stretch the ice and the vision that he has, I think he could be one of those guys that's better at the top level than he was at feeder levels, if that makes sense. So we'll see where that goes. You know, one of the things, Bill, we've talked about Travis Sanheim and that need to have the conversation as soon as, you know, camp starts with, you know, the brass and John Tortorella and, you know, put everything in that happened in the offseason in the rearview mirror and put last year in the rearview mirror. But one of the other knowns that I have was that I think he's the most important defenseman on this team for so many reasons, not only for this season, obviously with the loss of Ivan Provorov, but because he does have the contract extension kicking in and the long term, you know, the long-term contract, the no movement clause, all of those things. To me, he's the most important D-man on this roster, and to get him off on the right foot, I think is an absolutely paramount thing. Now, ultimately, that's going to be up to him, you know, and the way he plays and the way he comes in and the way he handles business. But to me, he's the most important D-man on this roster. He's got the most to gain for the team and for himself.
Yeah, and you know, it's going to be blue line by committee to a degree, but he's a crucial part of that. If he needs to bounce back to comparable to the level when he won the Barry Ashby Trophy and was really the impetus for the big extension. You know, with Provorov now in Columbus and you're trying to figure out where are the minutes coming from. And it's not just minutes by volume. It's also minutes by difficulty of matchups. And, you know, it's there has to be some guys for the anchors on the top there who, you know, or your guys with, when the game is on the line, who are the guys who went out there? Sanheim has to be one of those guys. The experience level, the young guys coming in, the fact that he's a big guy who can really skate, which is at a premium in the league. He's a veteran now. He's not a kid anymore. And just by the level of commitment, contract-wise, but also the number of minutes that you figure he's going to play and having turned the page on a tough year and not the best beginning with Torts, I think it's crucial for him to have a big year and kind of put all that in the rearview mirror and move forward. If he doesn't, then there's really questions as to, you know, how your pairs are going to work out. So I 100% agree that he's a critical guy, maybe the most critical guy in your projected starting six.
Yeah, I mean, he may be the most critical guy on the team. I mean, think about 3-on-3 overtime, like be able to utilize a guy with his length, reach, finesse, and skating ability in a 3-on-3. Like that's built for him. That's built for a player that moves like he does. It's built for Cam York, too. Bill, the last one in this episode I want to get to, and I feel so confident about this, you know, barring anything unforeseen, obviously injuries that can happen in camp or training or in a preseason game or a regular season game. But boy, do I feel a ton of confidence that, you know, the known commodity of Joel Farabee is going to be bounce back Joel. To me, he is a guy that is ticketed for comeback player of the year. Not that his year was terrible last year. I think we understood with the late surgery in late June last year. And, you know, he played all 82 games, wasn't supposed to be in the lineup until around Thanksgiving, coming off that neck surgery, which was a unique one, and losing so much of his pre-June training because he had to rehab from his surgery. But I think the bounce back that we're going to get from Joel, and the big part of the reason why I feel it, Bill, is because Joel Farabee didn't make a single excuse about anything last year. I mean, I tried to say it like to him, you know, like, hey, did you feel like you're kind of chasing it? Because he wouldn't go there. He does not think like that as a competitor. And because of that, because of what we saw before, 20 goals and 55 games in the shortened season, I think that we have a recency bias that Joel Farabee is not the player that we think he is all of a sudden because of last year. I think he's bouncing back and bouncing back in a big way.
Yeah, and I think that in the latter part of the season, March and April, he started to look like the Joe Farabee that we got used to seeing before the injuries.
Yeah, where was he going, Bill? Right to the front of the net a lot, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Stopping at the net.
Yep.
Stopping at the net. Yep. You know, one of the biggest things a lot of players get into when they're not scoring is that they skate right on past the net.
Yep. And hang out on the perimeter.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and he was getting back to the things he was doing, and also, you know, not just tipping some pucks, getting the loose pucks and getting rebound opportunities. And then also, you know, also shooting. I mean, I thought he was getting quality shots in general from the slot, getting in, getting below and inside the dots, and just starting to push the pace. You could see he was starting to feel it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And, you know, after, and he could kind of, it happens a lot in hockey. He had that long, long goal drought. I guess it was 25, 26 games, something like that last year. And then he scored in five in a row. Once he finally got that monkey off his back, it was like a weight off his shoulders. And then he started looking more like himself. There's every reason to believe that still young. He's still one of the younger guys on the team. Yeah. That he can carry that over to this season and have a strong season. And then, you know, I think there's a lot of potential in the Flyers forward group. Even before you get guys like Gauthier and who knows when Michkov is coming, but even before those guys arrive, it's not a bad group. It's not an elite group, but it there's some depth there. And so there's some competition there. You know, I think we've talked in previous episodes about Sean Couturier. If Couturier is healthy and it goes from there, but if he's healthy and reasonably close to himself before the back injuries, then I think it's a pretty good forward group. Obviously, Atkinson fits in that too. And then, you know, if Sean can't stay healthy or his game has fallen off offensively or whatever, then, you know, then maybe it's not as deep as it sounds on paper. But there's potential there. I think it's potential to have a pretty good forward group.
Yeah, and I think the thing that we all need to be careful of when preseason in the beginning of the season starts, provided Couturier is healthy and playing, is understand that it is going to take him a little time because he hasn't played since December of 21. It's been a while since he's played competitive hockey, longest of his life. I know he mentioned that to me when I sat down with him towards the end of the season. So, you know, we're going to have to be understanding of that and not, you know, sometimes we like to come to the full conclusion with a grain of salt as evidence. Sometimes you need a lot more than that. And that will be a big element. The other thing about Farabee too, just to wrap up on him is, you know, going into last season, I just thought that he was a player that John Tortorella would love, you know, guy that can kill penalties. He's undersized, but he'll jump in there and drop the gloves with a much bigger person. Maybe sometimes you go, dude, you don't need to be doing that, but he's just got a lot of gamer in him. And I think that Torts will respect that. I just didn't think he got to see the full Monty last year of Joel Farabee because of that surgery. And, you know, sometimes your confidence will wane when your body won't do what you're used to it doing. And when you have that late surgery, that's one of the things that can jump into play there as well. So we've covered a lot of ground in this one, Bill. We'll cover more ground coming up next week when you join us on another Monday edition. So check out PhiladelphiaFlyers.com, NHL.com, and HockeyBuzz.com to read all Bill's great work. And we will talk to you Wednesday on a brand new Flyers Day.